Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of It's Just Bodybuilding with my co-host, Dusty Hanshaw, and, of course, myself, Big Ron Partlow. Today on the show, we are going hardcore. We've got the beast from Britain, Jordan Peters, on It's Just Bodybuilding.
At Voices Radio Network.
I love the beast from Britain. Like, did you just make that up?
It's rolled off. I hope that's not already taken. There'll be some bodybuilder messaging me, "Hey, I'm the beast from Britain, you motherfucker."
You know that they would too, but you know what? You don't get to Trump Jordan, so you're fucked if that was your nickname.
Right. I know. So here we are, Dusty. Episode 9, It's Just Bodybuilding. You showed up on time for all 9 of these, and I think it's a record for me as well.
I feel like we're killing it right now. I mean, like, on time, and we even, like, scrambled a little bit before to chit-chat. I got the laptop plugged in today.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to go sideways. We're fucking...
So, I'm trying something new today, Dusty.
What's this?
Hatless.
I noticed you even got a fresh cut for it, though, too.
Well, I did. I'm going away tomorrow. I'm going to shoot 2 episodes of Mutant on a Mission.
Oh, okay.
So I had to do the fresh head shave, and I thought, well, I'll do it before the show, and I'll do an episode hatless, see how it goes.
I feel good about it.
You know?
You're powder-esque. You're good.
powder-esque. I never thought I'd be a bald guy with a beard. Like, if you would have told me when I was a kid, hey, you're going to be bald and have a beard, I'd be like, what? That doesn't make any sense.
I wouldn't have said that until Trent came into play. I was like, yeah, probably.
Oh, man. So last week's episode with all the Q&A and, like, the Coach's Corner stuff, you know, for some reason, you know, we came off 2 shows in a row where we had guests, right?
Yep.
And so we were like, oh, it's just us. And I was like, I hope that's enough.
It was nerve-wracking.
Yeah. I was like, I hope we're giving the people enough value. And then the messages and stuff I got were that they loved the questions. And I like to tell the questions. I actually watched that episode back, which is hard for me to do sometimes because you hear your own voice and it sounds weird.
Right.
But yeah, we had like a really like big range of different questions on that show. So it went pretty well.
Yeah, no, I like it. I feel like we get a lot done that way. And this way, like today, the questions we got, I mean, for the most part, are directed pretty strong to Jordan. Then I got about 4 or 5 that are they want kind of an around the horn answer on, so to speak.
Okay.
But, you know, should be good. The only downside is I got enough questions for like 4.5 hours of shows, so I don't know what we're gonna do here.
Yeah, I had to trim it. It was tough. There were just so many came in on the Instagram. So, you know, we'll just do a couple each, pass it back and forth, and we'll bring Jordan on. You ready?
Let's do it.
Let's get Director Scott to pull Jordan Peters up. Bring him on the show.
How's it going, Chuck? How are you?
Jordan Peters, welcome to It's Just Bodybuilding with Dusty Hanshaw and myself. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm really well, chaps. Thank you. How are you both?
We're doing good. I think Dusty's got a little bit of a lat pull, though, but he seems to be recovering.
Yeah, you know, you got to beat ourselves up every now and then with something stupid, right?
That looked like just an unlucky one. It was just one of those ones you don't even see coming, and it's like, shit, where did that come from?
Yeah, it sucked because I did a warm up with 16 plates, and it was super, like, you know, it just popped right up. So I was like, all right, we're gonna definitely go up to 18. And second rep, I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And then the biggest problem I had was it ruined the workout, and sure. Then I had to text my guy, and I was like, hey, I need in now. he's got like a 3-week waiting list, so I like to hit him up with, I can be there in 30 minutes.
Like, at least you stopped. Like, I'm guilty of when I feel that, okay, did that go? I then always do 1 rep more to check if it went or not. I'm like, I have to know. It's terrible. I'm like, okay, how bad is it? I have to test it in the moment. And then I await the pain. And if I don't get any pain, I'm like, fuck it, this set's going on. Like, I'm just keeping going. And I deal with it after this.
Yeah, no, that's actually what I'm going to post up the videos today. But so we did a ultrasound. You could see like a black area. And then he showed me where all the muscles attached. He goes, okay, it's all we got to do is clean it up. It'll be fine. He fixed it again. And I said, well, what if I'd have finished the set? And he goes, I probably would only last like one more rep before a tour. I was like, he goes, yeah, it would have either been below it or above it, but it would have went. I was like,
yeah.
Once in my life, I did the right thing. I called every woman I ever knew and was like, hey, I did the right thing today.
First time for everything. Well, JP, you're the perfect guy to have on with a couple of guys like us. I think all of us have mountains of logbooks, and we've all done a lot of progressive overload training. I sort of did the Dorian style early 90s, you know, progressive overload. Dusty was the DC guy. And now you seem to be the current like king of progressive overload when it comes to forums and information. And how do you feel about that? And you've become so known for that.
Well, to be honest, I mean, I've learned from you guys. Like I've read in the places where I've been able to just gather the information that you've all put out over the years. I mean, I first came across Dante when I was 17. And I just, as I started to read, I was like, okay, this makes so much sense to me. And especially with the way my mind already worked, that I could really connect with going into training sessions and achieving those things every single time. So the training like this was just an inevitability. And then I've kind of wandered off the path every now and again. I don't know whether you guys have been guilty of that, where you kind of get sucked into different things. And you're like, Dusty, I swear that you haven't. I swear you've just been like religious on the path.
he's like, had his moments. He's told me about him.
That's fair enough. Like I recently had one where I was like, okay, on paper, a reps in reserve idea sounds amazing to me. I was like, okay, let's try this out. And I got 8 weeks through it. And I was like, my strength is regressing. I'm getting weaker. Mm-hmm. And I could see it in my look. And I was like, I'm not touching weights I normally touch. And straight away, I was like, okay, something here isn't wrong. And you can't make up for those kind of important pivotal reps with additional volume. You're just not going to do it, in my opinion anyway. And I know that you guys agree.
Yeah. I think that's probably the hugest challenge with doing progressive overload is constantly being barraged with all the other stuff and seeing some of the guys that we see that are so talented that blow up on pump training. I mean, we've all seen those guys, and I know I was never one of them. Like pump training did nothing for me at all.
Sure. I mean, those guys are the worst people to learn from. Like they're incredible bodybuilders, but you can't take anything useful from what they do because they just look at weights and they grow. So for the normal person, like someone says this to me often, they're like, but what about what Phil Heath does? And I said, well, really, like Phil's probably going to be one of the worst people in the industry to kind of learn training methodology from. And he certainly has incredible things that you can learn from him when it comes to his kind of mental aptitude and his just his resilience to the pressure that he's under. But in terms of the way that he trains, that's not a useful teaching tool, in my opinion.
Right. It's very like he trains hard considering he's doing like 20 sets of quads.
Sure.
Like that's a tough workout. Like, you know, to go in and train with him would be fucking tough because you're not used to the volume. But it's a totally different approach.
Yeah, totally. Like, and again, that's not me trying to undermine Phil in any way. It's just like trying to point guys in the right direction of where they're going to be able to learn from. And that seems to be the hardest thing, is that the people will often try to learn from maybe the very best and the most genetically elite. And it's not always the most useful place to be looking.
So I have to ask you, you know, you've got a master's of science in exercise physiology, correct?
That's correct.
So you're a very educated meathead. Like there's not a lot of guys like you out there that have, you know, real solid, huge credentials academically and still pack the real gym evidence muscle around with you 24/7. Do you feel that you always wanted to be an educator? Like did school make you want to teach other people?
I'm fascinated with learning, to be honest. I mean, I always have to be learning in one form or another. So just at those times in my life, formal education suited me perfectly because I had to be filling kind of my time with something that I knew that was going to better me. So it was just the right place, the right time for me to kind of pursue that formal education. I mean, I don't necessarily think it's made me a better coach, or maybe like given me the tools to educate others in a better way. But the only kind of potential advantage is that the formal education allows you to look at things maybe a little more analytically. Mm-hmm. And you can question things critically a little more. But I think that for what we do, walking the walk is absolutely unbeatable. Like the years that kind of hardcore bodybuilding training will teach you, you will never ever learn that in a classroom. It is impossible.
I absolutely agree with you 100%. What do you? I have to ask you about this sort of. It's risen to like mythical standards, you know. This UK bodybuilding, like sort of persona, and I say it's 100% legit. I love UK bodybuilding. I love coming to England. I love training in the gyms with you guys. I love your attitudes, your Instagrams. And it all obviously has something to do with how I grew up a Dorian fan. You know, I was there, you know, new to the sport when he was becoming Mr. Olympia and all that. And Luke told us on his episode that that's just how you do things over there. Do you feel that that's really part of it?
It really is. And we also support each other a lot. Like we are all really good friends. We all drive each other on. Like obviously, I'm not comparable to Luke or James on a competitive level, but we push each other in the gym with what we're doing, just from the videos that we're sharing, and that we'll really kind of motivate each other to get the best that we can from training sessions. And it's always been a really nice ethos amongst us all. We all share a lot. It's really nice. Like there's no real attitude over here in the UK amongst anyone. It is genuine. So it's nice.
Yeah, it's an incredible thing. Dusty and I have had some killer workouts over there together. So it you know, from the old Temple Gym to Dino's, it's at you know, King's Gym, it's been a blast. What gym do you currently call home right now? Where's your training center?
So my partner Corinne and I, we live in like quite a small little town called Tewkesbury, but we've moved around the UK a lot just because of studies. So like we haven't settled anywhere really yet. So like we spent a year training at Strength Asylum. I don't know if either of you have been there.
No, that, I heard about it. Yeah,
incredible gym
with Eddie Hall.
Yes, yeah, like literally, like you'd be training, and on the rack next to you, Eddie would be training. And he's a really great guy, and he's always up for a laugh during his sessions, even when he's doing crazy stuff. And we would watch some of the stuff he would do, and it would just be totally mind-blowing. Like, there's one situation where he was squatting 7 plates and arse to grass pause squats. And I thought he'd, like, kind of fucked up his rep because he got his line wrong, and I thought he was going to just chuck the bar off his back. He just decided to go back into the hole again, sit there for like a couple of seconds, and then back up again with it. And I literally like turn around, what just happened there? It blew my mind how someone could be that strong.
And control 700 pounds.
It's unbelievable. It was just, so yeah, training in there was really, really great. And I was in Manchester for a year as well. And then I trained in a great facility into two gyms actually in Manchester that were really good. And then obviously where we are now, small gym, but we've kitted it out with a fair kit, and we have everything that we need in there. That's called MJ's. And that has a nice little thing.
So I have to ask you about, you just posted an incline hammer strength video where you had the extenders on so you could fit seven plates on there. And you were
just, and the extenders weigh a half as well, so.
Yeah, so it's 7.5 plates, yeah. So you were just going off in there. So how hard is it for you to find a gym that will let you go off like that?
So we opened the gym up that day because it was closed. So we had the gym to ourselves.
So when it's just me and Corin in there, we can absolutely go crazy and just do whatever we want.
So they give you the keys.
Yeah. I mean, as long as we don't break anything and we don't break each other, then we're fine.
Right.
And we don't break each other. I like that little addition right there.
Yeah. I'm going to hand you over to Dusty for a few here.
Okay.
You know, I guess a lot of the main questions I think are pretty repetitive for you, but I want to kind of push home on them. Is you pushed on the fact of talking to the elite genetic people. With that being said, when you started, were you someone who was just built already, or were you kind of average and you forged this yourself?
I weighed half the body weight that I do now when I started. So I have literally doubled my body weight entirely since I started bodybuilding. And I was very, very fit because I was a good rugby player, but I was not big in the slightest. I was fit and I was fast.
Right.
So I didn't have any real kind of, you would never have looked at me and thought that there was any genetic potential there at all. In terms of a physique standpoint.
Right.
But my biggest, I suppose, genetic strength is just my mental capacity to train really hard. I do have that in my favor. So some of us have kind of genetics in regards to the shape of their muscles, and some of us have the ability to get really fucking nasty when it counts. And if you don't have one, then you better have the other.
I love that. And the reason that I asked that, and it's kind of funny because I was asking it on a whim because I actually did not know the answer, was I think that that's kind of the key, because oftentimes when people meet someone like you, the thought is that you've always been big, and that maybe you don't have to train the way you do, you know, because I'm sure you get it. I know I just got it the other day strained my back. Was a guy jumped my shit because I trained so bad. And I'm like, if I didn't train this way, you wouldn't know my name.
Exactly. Entirely. Like, I can drop muscle off really, really fast. Mm. If I don't carry on doing what I'm doing, I bet you I could get down to 200 pounds in like 6 months if I wanted to, body weight wise, and it would just all fall off me. There would be nothing left if I didn't carry on training the way I train. It's not even like I'm just trying to – sorry, go on.
How much do you credit – and this is kind of a crossover, but the training to keep in the mask, because I think that's an area that people really underplay. I've been kind of hinting at it for a while, but this whole year, I'm not sure that I've strung together a week of perfect eating in 10 months, but I'm 285 pounds. So I literally push that it's because I still train the same way, so the muscle kind of stays. Do you feel that the training, once you've established muscle, can hold muscle as well as food and drugs, or what?
Talking for myself, I need all three. Right. I there's no wiggle room for me. If I miss meals, my training goes to shit, and then from there it's a downward spiral. Again, if I'm not pushing gear, like basically at the end of a cruise period, the difference in my physique is massive. I look like shit. It's just the total honest truth. And then it takes me about 10 weeks back into my cycle until I look like where I did before I started my cruise again.
Right.
So unless I am religious with my gear, my food, and my training, my body falls apart instantly.
So you have what I would call a very high maintenance physique.
100%. Literally, and I think that that's probably one of the reasons that's held me back from maybe reaching my competitive goals, is that I'm not even going to go down there because that's just making excuses for myself. I everything has to be bang on.
Right.
That's so crazy. It's cool to hear too, because it just proves kind of everyone's a little bit different, you know, because I've been stunned with what some people can get away with and what some can't as far as maintaining holding. And for me, my training's always been my brain. I just refuse to be weaker no matter what I'm doing.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it's just, I really do feel that a percentage of it is a decision. You know, like we'll walk into a gym and I'll say before we get started, like, all right, I'm gonna break the record on my RDLs today. Like, oh, well, didn't we deadlift yesterday? Yeah, it's fine. Like,
I 100% agree with you. Like, I used to do it all the time when we were driving over to Strength Asylum to deadlift. I would tell Corinne in the car what I'm going to pull today. Because she used to know that. She would ask me before. She was like, what are you pulling today? And I'd be like, 7.5, 6 reps. And I'd be like, literally, I would know exactly in my head. And for the whole, it would maybe take me 45, 50 minutes to warm up to get to that point. Right. I would just be pacing around the whole time whilst warming up. I wouldn't say a word to anyone. I wouldn't take my headphones out once. And I'd be like, right, this is make or break this set. I do not miss this set. And basically the rest of the day or even the week is underpinned on whether I make that set or not. Like,
I know exactly what you mean. I remember having numbers in my head and thinking I'm going to fucking smash this. And then I'd get the number and literally nothing else that week would matter to me.
100%, yeah.
Like, yeah. Nothing. Like, someone could tell me to go fuck myself. I could crash my car. I'd be like, it doesn't matter. I got my fucking hack squat.
Yeah. All
right. I want to ask a couple. I want to toss in some of our followers' questions real quick, too. Big Johnny H wants to know about your off season with Milos, the mentality it took to push his weight that high, your weight that high.
300 pounds, right?
Yeah, we went over 300. Yeah, that was one of the hardest things I have ever done. It was the first time I got over 300 pounds.
How tall are you?
5'6".
5'6", okay.
It was really, really, really difficult. But Milos made me believe. And I will never thank him enough for how much he made me believe that I could do it. He invested a lot of time into me, like kind of from like a mental, like just kindness perspective to reassure me that everything was okay, the way I felt was okay. Because there were moments where like I was so heavy, like laying down in bed, that even with my my CPAP respirator on, I couldn't breathe. So then I would have panic attacks trying to get to sleep. And I literally remember there was one time I had a panic attack, and then like Corinne, my partner, was away at a music festival, so I couldn't even get hold of her. So then the only person that I knew was always awake, because he basically never fucking sleeps, was Roman Fritz. And like we were really good friends at the time. So I messaged Roman and I was like, dude, I'm in trouble here. And then like, he like, spoke to me on the phone for like 40 minutes until I managed to fall asleep. It was really nice of him, actually. But yeah, like just trying to get through that period was interesting. Like I was so heavy that I couldn't walk more than 30 meters without needing to sit down. Like it was,
what was the time frame between, and what was the weight change between when you guys started and getting over 300?
I started with him lean because I went to him from like a post-show phase, and we went from 240 to 300 in 3 months.
Oh, that hurts my soul.
Oh, like, the speed of ascent on that is ridiculous. It's like that's daily poundage gain.
What you left, obviously, you stopped every 30 meters because you also needed to eat.
You can't. The food was so high that I would get anxiety as it would start to get closer to the next meal. And I'd be like, oh my God, okay, right, let's do this. And obviously, I was training twice a day. And at the time as well, we were doing 100 IUs of insulin a day.
Right. I was just going to ask. How much insulin was involved?
it was really insightful. Would I do that again? You couldn't fucking pay me enough to do that again in that time frame. Like, because it was something else. It was a big test.
Looking back on it, I got to 330 once, which at 6'1" is nothing compared to your 300, but 330 as a huge body weight, and I felt I, looking back on it, I'm like, holy shit, I'm lucky I didn't just die.
Yeah. No, like, I, oh my God. By the end of it, like, Corian said to me, she was like, in all seriousness, are you going to die? Like, she actually said that to me in that process. And I was like, okay, right. And I had to message Milos. I was like, we are not going any heavier. Because I remember him going to me, okay, 300 is good, now 310. And I was like, no, we're not going any heavier.
Oh, shit. Yeah. So how, I've seen a lot of Milos's plans, right? And they're very, very timing. Like, everything's timed.
Yes, yes.
It's like 20 minutes later, you do this, and then there's this meal, and then 20 minutes after that meal, there's this. How hard was that part of the protocol, that just incredible schedule?
That's no problem for me, because that's how my life runs anyway.
Right, okay.
So that literally is I with the way that kind of my work is and the way that we live our lives, that isn't an issue. That actually, like, probably plays into my favor, because mm-hmm. I'm a very structured person in that way.
Right. So it almost makes you like the plan better.
Yes. Like, I got on with him very well from that aspect.
Right. Which goes again, you know, how working with a coach has a lot to do with your personalities.
Yeah, Milos,
yeah, 100%.
Immediately.
Sorry, what was that?
I said Milos would fire me immediately. I was late for every single meal and early for three.
Like 5 minutes this way, 5 minutes that way.
I actually don't wind my watch, so people were like, it's not 4:10. I'm like, that's fine. It's more of a bracelet, really.
Yeah. So it's funny. I got the same question, Dusty. Make sure you ask him about Milo. So, I mean, I knew there was a story there of going really heavy, you know? Was he making you train differently, or was
no? I couldn't. Like, so before we went out, before we kind of endeavored on that journey, I went out to Serbia and I stayed with him. So that's how we got really close as well. And like, I stayed with him for a few days and trained, and I couldn't buy into his training system. And I just said it to him straight away. I was like, there is no way I am training like this. I said, this is just not for me. And he was totally fine with that. He was like, okay, you carry on training your way, and then I'll bring my way to it, and then between us, we'll make this work. And I was like, okay, that's cool. So that's kind of how we went.
How was your strength at that point compared to now? Like, what do you weigh now off season? How heavy do you get now, staying leaner?
This off season, I didn't go over 285, because that's kind of like my limit, where once I go above that, my training performance suffers. Mm-hmm. In the, like, I can't do my 20 rep sets because I can't fucking breathe. I feel sluggish and just awful once I go over that body weight. So that's kind of my realistic limit, where also I'm not too fat either. So right, 285 is a good body weight for me. So then I don't go above that.
And so you actually feel stronger now than when you were 300?
I was... On some things, no, in fact, actually, I am overall stronger on everything, even though I'm lighter, yes.
Yeah, yes. Okay. Okay, that's cool.
I think that's normal for everybody. There's a point where your wind outdoes the weight or the comfort. I know I've been heavy enough before. I mean, this was a 260 heavy when it was uncomfortable and I was fat, but like, where deadlifting was a bitch because my low back would give out so quickly, yeah. It was heavy.
Yeah.
Whereas now, you know, now at ninja weight, I could deadlift, you know, every day and be totally fine. No, yeah, no way. Sure. So here's a good one too. I think would be a good for both of you guys actually. What's your mental preparation before approaching a training session? So we're talking about on the way to the gym. What are we doing here?
Well, I mean, go ahead, man.
No, you go first. Go on.
Oh well, I mean, you know. I mean, now I, you know, when I talk about this stuff, I'm talking about when I was competing and stuff, and sure. I would crank metal, and just the drive to the gym was like just fucking cranked metal. Sometimes I'd be screaming the lyrics, like just getting fucking trying to get some anger going, because I always felt like there had to be some anger, and I always felt like there's some anger in all of us, and if we can use it for the right reasons, We can keep it at bay. So I would try to get angry a little bit for my sessions, you know, especially when I was logbooking in the earlier days and coming up and stuff. It was very much about music. I would put my headphones on as loud as they would fucking go, and I would walk into the gym with my headphones already blasting so that I couldn't hear anybody. And I would walk straight to the fucking rack, and I'd throw my bag in the rack. That's my fucking rack. And I would like it, and there, and I remember like just feeling like I was going to fucking pop, you know? And I know Jordan has the same ability to get that out of him, right?
Yeah, totally. Like, so mine will start kind of in the maybe 90 minutes out from a session is when I'll start to write my logbook numbers in. And I will go through my session and kind of just mentally rehearse the lifts that I want for that session.
Yes.
Like on the days where I'm feeling really, really good, this could even start the night before. So I'll have my logbook out the night before a session and I'll start writing my numbers in, and I'll start to think about in my head what that session means to me, how I need to come away from that session, and just the importance that I place on those individual sets.
So you when you say you're writing your numbers in,
mental rehearsal is a big aspect of for me.
When you say you're writing your numbers in ahead of time, you mean you're writing in the weights and then you're putting the times and then you're leaving the space blank, or are you putting a six?
I will have like rep targets that I will want as well.
Right.
Because typically I'll know what I have and the rate at which I can progress. So like I'll sometimes put like just even just a 1.25 on, and then I'll have like 12 as my target. But then in that session, if I feel really great, I might get that 1.25 progression, and then I might get 13. So I might get a bit of a rep, might get a rep and a bit of a weight. Like that's like a dream set for me if I can take both on the days that I'm really flying. Like interestingly for me, like music is a huge component, but I don't use loud music. I have to use very, very, very calm music. So for me, it's often things like classical music that I'll be listening to. So like today I was listening to the soundtrack from The Lion King. I know it sounds nuts, doesn't it? But I need something very, very calm to take me out of where I am and put my head to where it needs to be. So for me, I go deep into stuff that's probably not even healthy to start thinking about, in all honesty. Like in all seriousness, I'm not even joking. I start thinking about like the way I grew up, things in my childhood, like just things that you really don't want to dig up in those moments.
But they bring out intensity.
I lose all control sometimes, in the sense that I will unrack a weight and I won't even feel the weight in my hands. So like I could pull a 7-plate pull off the floor, and genuinely I don't even feel like I've got a weight in my hands because I am in pure rage. It's pretty bad. Like and neurologically I'm absolutely destroyed from it. But some of the really, really nutty strong stuff I've done sets with tears rolling down my eyes. Like my training partners are totally used to it. They're like, that's normal, and they don't even bat an eyelid to me. They'll be like, what the fuck, he's crying getting into his set. This is a totally normal occurrence for me to do that.
I've seen one other athlete cry, and then Dana Lynn Bailey told us about how she was training for the Olympia and she was crying while she was squatting, and she just kept squatting, and the emotions were driving her, and it was crazy.
That's real fuel. Like if you know how to tap into that stuff, you are invincible in that moment. The only thing is that you have to pick your exercises wisely from a safety perspective. Mm-hmm. Like I know the movements I can and can't apply that level of aggression to. Right. Like, so for example, today I leg pressed without any music on. I didn't get revved up because my left knee is battered in the leg press. My right adductor is battered, and I have to lift slow, without power, without aggression. Because right. I know that if I put myself into that headspace and I try and do that, I'm in trouble. Whereas if I pull off the floor, I have never had any kind of risky moment ever pulling off the floor. I know I can go full rage mode onto it and I am totally safe. So I just have to pick and choose my movements where I take my head to that place.
How many people do you think truly find the ability to laser target their focus and energy like that? I mean, I have a saying, you know, if I take a client, put them through a workout and they do stuff they've never done, I said, see, you just found another gear. You didn't know you had that gear. But how many people do you think have 2-3 gears left? Like, because where you go, and I've been there before, Dusty's been there. I'm not sure how many people ever realize that that's a reality.
I don't think very many people do. Like, it's weird. It's not, like I said, it's not like a healthy thing to do to yourself, really. Like, I dig up all the nastiest shit that I can think of in my head and push myself to the point where, like, I'm so distraught with anger and emotion. Like, I don't encourage anyone to behave in that way either, really, because you either have that ability or you don't. Like, James Hollingshead is a nasty, nasty motherfucker.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he really is. Like, I don't know how deep James has shown you some of his aggression before, but honestly, like, James is, I would say of everyone I know in the UK, James is the nastiest. Like, obviously in a great way, because he's also one of the kindest.
Well, that's how a lot of us are.
Yeah.
And I honestly think that, I mean, we could get super deep on this, Jordan. I see where the path leads on this talk. I mean, I think that a lot of us have something in us that we need an outlet for, and bodybuilding happened to show us as, like, when I found bodybuilding and progressive training, Dorian style training, and I got really into it, I remember just thinking, this is awesome that I can just explode every day for an hour, like absolutely explode. And it wasn't all physical, it was mental and emotional and everything. And then I can just be so nice and relaxed the rest of the day.
Yeah.
Right. And I think there's obviously something to that, that maybe more people would benefit if they could find an outlet for their frustrations or you know, things that trouble us along life's path.
I agree. It's certainly a useful way for us to kind of target hardships that we've had. It really is.
Now, I also think that, like you were saying about not being healthy, how it's not really good for us to get like that.
Yeah.
I know there's points in time where I've said, like, I know it would sound crazy and super negative, but I was like, I was painting myself into a corner. Like, I'd have a set, I'd have the hack squat loaded up or something, and I'd be like, if you don't get 6 reps, you're fucking useless. Like, you have to destroy this, or this is it. Like, your life means fucking nothing if you don't get 7 reps with this. This is fucking, like, enough fucking around. Like, I would say stuff like that to myself. And, you know, I was crazy. I was in my 20s and stuff. But it fueled me.
Yeah.
And, you know, later on in life, I wonder if that sort of, like, damaged my brain somehow. But we just don't know.
We'll never know.
I'm sure that it's left me pretty screwed up.
Oh, man. You touched on something earlier in the podcast, and I think we should elaborate on it. You said, you know, we've all ventured from the path, and we've all tried other things and realized it didn't really work for us. Do you see, is there a way that you can see yourself successfully volume training, or do you just, like, I don't know, is there anything that you could see yourself moving towards in the future that does make sense to you?
The moment that I train for volume will be the moment where I'm trying to prioritize health again.
Right.
That will be the time I switch to that. And I will just go in what my body has on that day. I won't overly think about anything else. And I'll just string some sets together, and then, like, how kind of, I suppose, other people train. And that will be my training method when I'm trying to lose the body weight that I have. Right. All the while that I'm trying to still kind of pursue
what I'm doing, there is absolutely no way I will entertain that thought process again.
Interesting. Give us some examples of some of the craziest gains that you've seen when you've taken someone for the first time, where they've been training volume their whole, you know, years they've been doing it, and you've really seen them explode. Because I know you've helped some guys just blow up.
One of the best ever that still is like burnt into my mind is what we did with Sass. It was in the rebound from one of his shows. He was my training partner for 5 months. And weights in sessions that he's never even got closer to before.
Sorry, we lost you for a minute there. You were talking about blowing Sass up.
Yeah. So he was touching weights that he's never ever touched before. And the way that he looked by the end of this 5 months was absolutely crazy. It was unbelievable.
But is that when you guys were at Strength Asylum?
Yeah, yeah. But the problem was it burnt him out so much. He then had to take 3 or 4 months off of training completely.
Was he?
I felt so guilty because I pushed him and pushed him and pushed him and was in his ear every session. And like, I remember he was like dumbbell pressing like the 75, 80 kilo dumbbells. And he was like, I've never pressed over the 50s before. And I was just like, oh my God, what is going on? And he was just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it was just insane. And then he just messaged me one day and he was like, I just can't come and train anymore. And it just, it wrecked him.
So, is that why he took such a break? I didn't realize that that's why Sass kind of backed away.
That was kind of the start of it, because he fell out of love with training so much because of the mental approach that we took to the training sessions. Because he was coming into sessions dreading them. Mm-hmm. So, I love Sass. Like, I'd do anything for him. He knows that. And so, like, I was so excited by this. And then we kind of got to the end of it, and I was like, oh, my God, I've never seen that backfire so much ever. Like, I know.
Wow.
But I couldn't believe it. He took his top off and I couldn't even believe it. If he could carry on that path, I hate to think what he could do. It would be scary.
I remember actually seeing Sass when you guys were training together. Mm. And people don't realize how good a bodybuilder he is. Like, he's only done a few shows, you know.
Like, okay, so one of the beautiful things about Sass is that, you know, when you see someone train and they lift a weight and you can see that they connect with the weight, they lift immaculately, but just kind of innately, that's just the way that they lift. That's Sass. So yeah. Then we combined it with getting strong, and it was like his muscles just went, hey, I'm going to have some of this. And they blew up. Like, it was just unbelievable. It was so fucking cool. It was one of the coolest things I've ever seen.
Oh man. Now with the way you train the progressive overload style, which is like, man, the questions I got, like 95% of them are about logbooks and progressive, like people just love you and that shit. Like, they're all over it. With the way that you train and stuff, what would be the worst injury you've had?
It's never been anything major. It's only just kind of consistently popping fibers. So, like, I won't really go through a week without popping something. But it'll only be little niggles. It'll be like, oh, shit. Like, the day after a chest session, I'll be like, okay, that's bunched up weird. And I'll be like, well, okay, I definitely just popped a few fibers there. And then the next session, I'll just back off on the loading a little bit. And then the same, it'll be like a few fibers in my quad, a few fibers in my glutes. It's just, when you're pushing to that extreme, something kind of gives a little, quite a lot with me. but it's never anything that phases me enough that I'm like, I just can't constantly work around it.
You seem so relaxed with that concept. I think it's pretty foreign to most people.
Oh, 100%. Like today on the leg press, I popped some adductor fibers going really heavy a few months ago. So then now, like, my leg press is shifting all over the place. So then I'm getting some left knee issues because I was then shifting onto the left leg. Now my body's shifting back off the left leg to protect the knee. So now I'm getting some glute issues. And it's like, it's just a constant, this is taking a hit, that's taking a hit. But it's like, well, I survived the session, so I'm all good to go.
Right. I got one more question here. I'll turn you over to Dusty. I had two people ask me how you think natural competitors versus enhanced competitors should prepare for shows. What would there be any key differences?
I don't think that there's really a difference in regards to training, personally. I think that a natural trainer can train with a low volume, high intensity approach in the exact same manner. The only thing is that you just have less tools to play with in regards to muscle preservation. That's just the simple part. Fat loss is a caloric deficit over a prolonged period of time. They're just not privy to being able to use thyroid meds, Clen, or then the composition improvements that you're going to get from Trenbolone. So then for them, it's just move more, eat less, until it's all done. That's it. There's nothing more to it than that.
It actually simplifies the process, doesn't it?
It really does. And you can see it in their look because they have such a clarity to their look. Because they're not holding excess water from testosterone, and they're not trying kind of anti-aromatase drugs. They're not blurring detail with growth hormone. They don't even have shots blurring deltoid separation in the rear double. Now, when you see a crazy shredded natural guy in the rear double pose, his delts are just like they've had a rake dragged across them. You never see that in assisted bodybuilding because we've been jabbing our shoulders so much for so many years that we just have like scar tissue just built up across the whole of it. So like we're never going to have that clarity. And so I do anyway because of just how much gear I need to take. I don't know about you guys.
I love it. At least that's how it is for me.
my shoulders are just a blur. So.
That's where you get the you spend $1,000 a month on massage to break that up, I think.
Something like that, yeah.
No, go ahead, Dusty.
I don't think that there's any more to that process than that.
Okay.
So here's another one, similar lines. How do you suggest optimizing off-season for maximum gain with food and training, no gear, meaning gear doesn't matter?
Okay, it's just a patient approach because everyone's going to be able to build muscle at different rates, and that's going to basically come down to maybe how intense you can train, or even maybe more on the deeper physiological level that you're just going to adapt to overload better than others. I mean, there's certainly some genetic variation there. Like some people, despite getting really, really strong, maybe won't grow as well in certain areas. But it's just, again, a patient approach of taking your body weight up, taking your calories up to a place where you're comfortable with your body fat, getting as strong as you can across that process, and then what you get is what you get. Mm-hmm. Some of us do great out of that run, and we could maybe go up 30, 40 pounds in overall weight and get 6-7 pounds new muscle, which would be lovely if every time we did it. Some of us, when like you're new to it, could go up 30, 40 pounds and get 15 pounds of new muscle.
Right.
So there's just going to be a variation in that.
No, I love that. Now, here's actually a pretty good one. What are your thoughts on DC training, the formal DC training?
I absolutely love it. I mean, I think that for anyone that's new to training, you cannot beat that setup. I think is absolutely unbeatable. I mean, the full body or the upper lower, the way that Dante wrote it, is I think it's flawless.
Right.
I think that you're going to get very, very strong quicker than you could with any other approach. And then it just comes down to your ability to eat. Right. So if you can take your body weight up enough, man, Like, I've just taken on a client that, well, he's been working with me now for 20 weeks. This is his first ever cycle, first ever low volume training phase. Mm-hmm. And so far since we started, we're already up 30 pounds in body weight with around about the same kind of conditioning. I think that by the time we get to 9 months in, we'll probably be up 50 pounds in total body weight. That's pretty realistic for those kind of approaches.
Right. I think that's a big key because, you know, I do want to ask this, and this is my own twist on that question. Do you have your guys send you videos? Because I find in my own personal experience that people really have no idea where failure is. So they'll send me a set, and I 9 times out of 10, I'm like, oh, your set just started, but you put the bar down. So I got confused. you're just about to get hard, and then they rack it. And you're like, oh, shit. No, that was the beginning, not the end.
It's the thing is, it's so hard to teach that with online training. And even when you critique a video, it's hard then for them to go back into the next session and be able to apply it. I mean, that's the kind of thing that it's only a there in-person type thing where then they can feed off of the way you execute and then they learn to adopt that approach.
Right.
That's the only way that I've been able to help people in that manner. So I've had training partners make really good progress because they've understood what real intensity is. Mm-hmm. But it's so hard to teach over online coaching.
Yeah. I do feel like a lot gets lost because, you know, you'll see, and I share videos, your videos, James' videos, mine, and I'll literally tell them, like, I'll send a video and say, all right, you see at the 9th rep where you can see him start to struggle, and then you watch him shift gears. Mm. And all of a sudden he gets to 12, and you're like, okay, well, he's done now. And then, shit, did he just shift gears again? And then all of a sudden there's one more rep, and it's like, that's the rep you came for.
Sure. All
the other ones were just to get to that, and that's the one that decides the size. And I've been just trying to perfect that, so I wanted to steal your advice. It is very difficult to teach that, and people will see it. I just trained with a guy yesterday, first time training with me, and he said the same thing. He goes, it was like you found a new place on that set. I was like, oh, no, I just started. That's the first working set. Sure. You know, the warm-ups are just touches, you know?
Yeah. I've had lots of clients where I'll get them going on a program and they'll quite often email back and they'll be like, I feel like I should be doing more sets. And it's so frustrating to try to communicate. Well, that means you're not training hard enough. Like I remember the days of doing 4 sets of quads and then vomiting.
Yeah, for sure.
And I say that to people that are like 4 sets, like to them, 4 sets just seems like nothing, but those 4 sets absolutely destroyed me. Like, and I remember training that way, and it's so hard to communicate that to someone. And you know, I get emails all the time like, hey, the workouts are going good, but I feel like this leg workout's easier than what I used to do. And I'm like, you used to do 20 sets. You lose clients about that all the time?
All the time. In honesty, Ron, now I don't try to fight it anymore. Like, I want these guys and girls to know now what they're signing up for when they sign up with me. If I can't get them to, if they aren't already invested in this approach, it's a hard sell. And then it's not enjoyable for us as coaches, and it fucking isn't enjoyable for them as clients. Right. So then I strip away. I'm just like, you know what? We're not a good match. Like, I'm going to put you in the direction of someone else. Just because they're not going to make the progress otherwise. That's where I'm kind of at now with coaching.
You're where Dante was when I started with him. It was funny, but I reached out to Dante and I said, hey, I saw you. And I introduced myself, you know, and he responds back with, I know who you are. You look phenomenal. Keep it up. And I, you know, so at first I get that email. I'm like, yeah, I'm looking good. And I'm like, wait, no. So I email him again. I'm like, that's great that you know me, but I need more. It was literally, I teased that I'm pretty sure I nagged him into working with me. Because he was like, no, I'm not taking clients anymore. And I was like, yeah, it's fine. You don't have to take clients. You just have to take me. That'll be fine.
Right.
I was broke. So I actually told him, I think he charged me like $800 or $1,000. I told him, if I ever question anything you do or change one thing, you now have it in writing that you can delete my email and never answer me again. And by the way, I had to save for 2 months to get this $1,000. So let's do it. He finally broke. He was like, okay, fine, but don't ever question anything.
I have endless respect for Dante. Yeah, he's always been very, very kind to me. Like, when there was a moment when I put up a post about doing and he messaged me and he was like, just don't do it. And he was like, what are you stuck with? What do you need help with? He was like, just talk to me about it. So, just anything but that.
Well, Jordan, I know you have a very important sushi date that you have on your schedule to maintain that high maintenance body of yours. Do you need several sushi dates a week to maintain your body weight? Is that how it works?
Typically, for this last off season, Cora and I have just done sushi after every leg day. We come home, we have our post-workout meal, which is always something fast, like cream of rice, whatever, just digests well. And then we, for our post-workout meal, we then go to sushi. So it's pretty nice.
I would never want to stand between two hardcore bodybuilders and their post leg workout sushi. So Dusty and I'll let you go. Been a pleasure having you on It's Just Bodybuilding. Well, thanks for contributing to our little project over here.
It was a pleasure, and yeah, what you guys are doing is awesome, and huge honor to be invited on and be a part of it. So.
Yeah, thanks very much, Jordan.
Appreciate you, buddy.
Cool, cheers, guys. I'll see you soon. Bye now. Yeah.
Hey guys, why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.
There we go, Dusty. Jordan Peters.
That was phenomenal, man. I got to tell you, the segment on where you take your mind, I really felt like we could have rolled that shit for hours. I'm very grateful that I have a workout to get to after this, because there ain't much that gets me going. But I was kind of like, this guy might be as sick as me. I fucking love it.
Yeah, I had a lot of memory lane stuff happening when he was talking about like pacing around and, you know, just like getting vibrating. And then when I was like, fuck, I remember driving to the gym with my music just cranked and putting my headphones on in the car and cranking them.
Dude, I visualized you screaming your metal and just imagining being in the car next to you like,
oh, yeah, yeah. What the fuck is wrong with that kid? And another thing, too, is headphones used to go way louder back in the day.
Agreed. They weren't
so
yet.
Yeah, so I'm talking like Walkmans that you put cassette tapes in. They weren't thinking of our health back then. They were making a cassette tape player and putting fucking headphones on it. But the volume regulation would go way louder. Oh, like, sure. I remember being in Australia listening to Metallica Kill 'Em All on my Walkman.
Walkman. Sitting at Google that, kids. Google that.
Sitting at the very back of the fucking bus. And I was taking the bus to the gym and I was going to train. I'm sitting there, probably got a Gators gym boat neck shirt on with a tank top underneath and a fanny pack. And I'm sitting at the, probably a bandana. And I'm sitting at the very back of the bus, eh? And all of a sudden, everyone on the bus starts kind of looking at me, like turning around and looking at me. And I'm looking around and everyone's sort of looking at me and I'm like, what the fuck? And then I look up at the front and I see the bus driver's looking at me in the mirror and he goes like this. So I take my headphone out and he goes, can you turn that down, please?
And I was like, you're playing for everyone in the bus.
I was like, holy shit, these headphones are pretty loud, man. And yeah, they don't make them like that anymore. I can't find headphones that go loud enough because I'm half fucking deaf, you know.
Gator's Gym bus ride.
Because of those bus rides and you know, working in the bar for 16 years, right? But yeah, I can't find headphones that go loud enough. I'm always disappointed with their volume output. In the old days, man, they used to just fucking, you could put them on your desk and turn them up and everyone in the room was like, oh, I like this song. Like, you know what I mean?
Your headset on your desk.
Oh yeah. No, those are the days. But no, I had a lot of good memories listening to Jordan. He sure has an energy about him when he talks about training.
But I think that that is why people are drawn to him, because it's a pure passion. And I wish that more and more people ever get the opportunity to feel that. Because you and I both know, and I know that we've got some listeners that are into bodybuilding, but I can promise you there are moments in your career that you will remember, whether it's a workout, an instance where you look in the mirror and see yourself for the first time. I mean, there's just a lot of shit like that that until you've trained that way and loved bodybuilding that way, you'll never truly understand.
I sure am glad that I had the experience of kind of going down that path. You know, I'm not sure what my physique would have looked like had I not kind of found that sort of mental approach. You know, who knows? Maybe I would have just been a weekend warrior if I wouldn't have gotten the fire lit under me of the whole idea of going off like that in the gym. So yeah, I'm pretty thankful for the progressive overload life experience.
No doubt, no doubt.
Do you have any other questions? Are we could do a little coach's corner here.
Absolutely, I mean, I got a few, man. So
I got one on deck right now, so I'll go first. Shoot it. Okay, so this guy wrote it on my. Actually, wrote it on your picture. This Adam James Cooper guy. You got that one on file. Do you like to put the majority of your carbs around your workout or spread them out evenly through the day? Can you and Rep 300 talk about how you would structure off-season food and monitoring your body to add or cut food? So he also mentions, like, do you add or cut cardio off-season? Like what do you do? Like, when you increase food, is it just carbs that goes up? That sort of thing. Personally, I believe that once your protein is set to like 1.5 grams per pound, and it's actually 1.5 grams per lean pound is what I always went by. So whatever my stage weight was, I go 1.5 that, and that would be my protein.
Right.
And then my fats would just be what's in the food I eat, because I don't really eat a lot of fat, and I would maybe add some peanut butter off season and stuff. But otherwise I wasn't really big on fats. Right. You know, I ate steak and ground turkey and eggs and stuff, so I didn't really add a lot of fat. I would just increase carbs.
Right.
Everything above that would be carbs. So the body weight would be totally manipulated with carbs being moved. I wouldn't move my other macros at all. They wouldn't even budge. The fat might go up on a higher carb day because there might be some fat in the carbs, but it wasn't like planned or really measured. But yeah, that's how I always did it. And I always felt like my body operated best having my carbs evenly throughout the day. So especially in the off season, when you're eating a lot of carbs anyways, I didn't ever feel a need to bookend my workouts at all. I would just spread my carbs out evenly and and maybe if there was some liquid carbs to be had, that could be kind of punched in around the workout or something, but otherwise I kept it pretty even.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I mean, pre-contest, I'll move things around. Primarily, obviously, for everything I do is based on performance.
Yeah.
What makes me the strongest in the gym is key. And I went all the way down to paying attention to what protein sources were best before training and whatnot. But yeah, I'm the same with you. When it comes to carbs in the off season, there's so many. It's really just I need to find a way to get them in. Only tweak might be that I do still do a very fast acting carb after I train. And no, it's not because of insulin. I take insulin before I train. But it's because it gets in quickly. So I just want something when I'm done trainings, particularly on big days. And I get, it's funny, but I have friends and training partners that can go eat a meal right then. I actually got to do like a shake drink kind of meal. And then 30 to an hour later, I can go eat a real meal. I can't get done with a nasty leg workout and go blast a shit ton of food. Where the, you know, the strawberry soda comes into play and maybe like a scoop of protein. It's not a ton. Strawberry soda is a secret, people. Trust me.
Fanta. Right, right.
You want to Fanta. You do. But no, I mean, so as far as that goes, yeah, I mean, and really what I would suggest the answer to the question is there are no rules. So figure out what works best for your body. I eat two meals a day before training. Both of them are very high carb. And then the rest of that, I do find that, you know, I have the luxury of choosing when I train. It is drastically better for me if I get at least two meals in. And that doesn't change if I go later in the day. Whereas if I go on an empty or one meal, by the end of that workout, I'm starting to feel the, oh shit, I've only had 100 grams of carbs all day.
Right, right. You start to notice it. It's the days when we, you know, occasionally you're going to get a fucked up day. Like, mm-hmm. you know, and when you get a fucked up day where your meal timing is kind of messed up and you go in and you train and you're like, you know, I only dropped a rep on a couple things, but I dropped a rep.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of hydration too, don't you? I mean, I really feel that hydration plays a huge role. Screw up on. I mean, Depani put this in my head, and I say my head like he spoke to me. He literally typed it somewhere. Could have been MD Forms or whatever. I mean, I was nobody. He didn't know me. And he said that every morning he wakes up and drinks a liter of water before he does anything else. So I started doing that. And that change all by itself was enormous. So, like, I get up in the morning, I pee, I walk to the fridge, and I have literally a liter. And I just stand by my refrigerator and drink it. And then once it's done, I can start doing something because that hydration is a game changer. Even two meals deep, if you're busy and doing a lot of shit, you might find you only drink a liter of water by the time you've eaten two meals. And that absolutely affects your training, particularly when you're blasting heavy weight.
I do exactly the same thing. I got the 1 liter mutant shaker, my old ancient battered one here. I fill it as soon as I get up and that's in me before I eat breakfast.
Yeah.
You know, there's a liter of water in front of my breakfast. So hydration's massive when it comes to performance in the gym. I've had lots of days where I've missed food, but I made sure I was hydrated and I was fine. Yep. You know what I mean? Yep. But that crazy stat, you know, what is it? 5% dehydration is a 30% performance drop.
Right.
You know, the crazy numbers they put out for some of those studies. And so I think bodybuilders need to, especially people who train early in the day, need to make sure they're hydrated. And people who sit at office jobs don't drink nearly enough fluid, you know, and they've got to make sure they're on their game. So I find some of the guys that are best at hydrating are the ones who actually have like hard jobs because it's like part of the job.
Yeah.
You know, like they actually make sure the guys are drinking, you know, it's like, it's funny that you have a
not drinking because they don't want you to pass out and hurt yourself.
Like when you get like a guy who works construction and he pounds 5 liters a day and then you get some guy in an office who's like, I haven't drank for 6 hours.
Yeah.
You know,
I tell all my clients, if you're ever thirsty, it's too late.
Thirst happens after you're dehydrated.
Yeah, so there's no reason to ever get there. So, yeah, office desk people, I literally, because a lot of them go, well, I keep a gallon. I'm like, no, keep a glass or something and literally just drink it. Like, I don't want you sending more than 2 emails without having to drink. Like,
Right.
Find
I know what you mean.
To be drinking. And if you're not getting threatened for being fired for peeing too much, you're probably not drinking enough.
Yeah. I had to tell you, too, there's a the guy that asked the marijuana question last week.
Yes.
He trains at my gym.
Oh, no shit.
And so he came up and he's like, hey, thanks a lot for answering my question. And you know, we had so many. I was like, which one was yours? And he goes, oh, I asked the marijuana question. I asked you and Dusty. Remember? Right. And I was like, so I wanted to give that guy a shout out. Thanks for, thanks for asking one of the best questions of the week last episode.
Oh, for sure.
Because I had a lot of people message me about that one.
Well, it's a curious thing when people are dancing with which side they're supposed to be on because they want to be serious bodybuilders, but they also want to do this over here, you know?
Right, right. And a lot of people mentioned, they're like, I had no idea Dusty was in on it. I was really surprised Dusty was one of us.
One of us. I'm now in. I want a pin or something for sure.
You got a whole new fan club now, buddy. You've opened, there's a whole part of the bodybuilding subculture that's like, huh, maybe I'll order one of his shirts.
Now I know what he meant by powder. I thought he was talking about the movie.
No. No, it's good. They loved it. Everyone loved it. So, and also I had a few of my friends message me. They loved that we talked about Tarantino movies and stuff like that because, you know, I think sometimes when we get off the, you know, like we just had JP on and talked about training.
Yeah.
You know, which a great episode, obviously people are going to, you know, learn a lot from it, but I think they really like having the mix too, you know?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I'm noticing every episode that I just ask for questions, we're absolutely getting more and more variety of questions where it's not just bodybuilding, which I love the bodybuilding questions, obviously, I mean, that's what we're here for. But, you know, I think it's good to get the variety.
You got one
more that is pure bodybuilding, which I wish I would have hit on when JP was here. But this guy, Tyler Wilson Fit, wants to know everyone's personal progress from their first legit cycle.
Personal progress from first legit cycle. Yeah. My first cycle was Russian D-ball.
Mm-hmm.
It was like 100% legit and real from Russia. It was a little pop out tabs. It was right. Fucking awesome. It was 5 milligram tabs. And I was 18, pretty young for first cycle, but that was back in the day. We didn't have anyone around us to tell us as there it was, you know, there's only like 5 guys in the whole city that were doing it. Right. So, we got this Russian D ball and I remember I'd already benched 3 plates and squatted 4 plates for reps in high school. So I was already like a big kid. I was like 220 playing football and, right. You know, and like nobody else could bench 3 plates and squat 4 plates back then at that age, you know, it was really rare. So then all of a sudden I started D ball and I was like repping 3 plates.
Right.
And I remember there was this cop who trained at the gym and he comes up to me like 6 weeks in and he looks at me, he goes, you got your hand in the cookie jar, don't you? And I stole that saying and I say it to young guys now when I see them, I'm like, you got your hand in the cookie jar, don't you? And they look at me like they don't have a clue what I'm talking about. But now, yeah.
No, did you answer that you had your hand in the cookie jar?
I just kind of smiled. I go, what are you talking about? And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah. But I was I think I was like 225 when I started it. Cause I was 230 in grade 12 for like a bit, but I was just like blown up, like eating Burger King and stuff. But I was like 225, I think, when I started the D ball and I went to 242, something like that. So like right. 17 pounds. It was only 8 weeks, I think.
Right.
And a lot of it was fluid, right? Your face gets all, you know. Yeah. But I got strong. Like I went from, you know, benching 3 for a single to benching 3 for like 5 or 6 reps.
Right.
And my squat was like, you know, 4 plates for 3 or 4 reps. And it went to like 4 plates for sets of 10. No problem.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, it was just I was like, oh, shit. I was like shoulder pressing like 110, 120 pound dumbbells when I was 18. Like. That first cycle, I got like strong on everything right out of boom. And I was training Dorian style by then. So right. I was doing like one or two working sets per exercise. That was it.
Right.
I remember I was hack squatting 5 plates, like stuff that I look back on now. I was like, fuck, I was really young doing that. But right. That was my first cycle.
That's nuts. Yeah. I did Primo ampules, 1 a week and for 10 weeks. And I put on 25 pounds. And I remember just
on Primo.
Yeah. and it was, you know, and you know how I got that. It was, do you want to try something? Sure. What is it? Okay, that's fine. Like I had no idea what I was doing. those will work. I remember trying to figure out how to break those damn things. Oh, it was a nightmare. But it was literally, I can say for sure that I, more so then than now, actually. Now I love being off because I'm lazy. But back then I remember being like, God, I don't ever want to feel human again. Like, because it was like a light switch. I remember I was training with my wife at the time, and I think I was 24 or something like that. And I was going for shoulder press. We were doing dumbbell shoulder press, and I don't know what the weight was, but I think I told her, like, all right, we're going to shoot for 8, you know, and I kick it up. And I remember at like 11, I was like 11, and I'm kind of like looking back at her, like, what the fuck? 12, 13. I put it down. I look at her, I'm like, this shit's awesome. And she's like, this is going to be crazy. I mean, it was like, it was the weirdest thing. I remember, like, so this is what people talk about. And I mean, now in hindsight, I'm laughing going, that's what I was taking. But all it took was something.
How much Primo were you using?
1 amp a week. So I think those were 100 or 200 milligrams.
200 milligram amps. I was doing 25 milligrams of D-ball.
A week?
A day.
Oh, I was like a week.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Imagine five.
One, yeah. Monday through Friday.
Yeah. One Monday through Friday. No, I was doing 25 milligrams of D-ball a day. That was, I remember the dose, because they were 5 milligram tabs, and I tapered up. So I even started at like 10 and then went 15, 20, and then 25 for like 4 weeks.
Right.
And then,
well, you were also doing the math on how many pills you had.
That's exactly it. You buy like, I don't know, 200 or 300 D-ball. I can't remember. And then you just have to make it last. So I was like doing the math on it. So I like went up to 25 and then back down to 10 or 5 or something. Like it was nothing. But that also makes me think of something that I was told, you know, by one of my mentors when I was young. It was like, if you do like an ampicillin and 20 mgs of D-ball, I think he said an ampicillin a week and an Anadrol a day, and you don't fucking explode, you suck at bodybuilding.
Right. Which I agree with 150%, because everyone wants to start with the roof. I mean, I always call the drugs the roof.
Right.
You know, they're putting on the perfect shingles of their roof and no foundation. There's no food. There's no training. You know, and I find that typically it's actually – everyone thinks they train hard and they don't. And the food is shit and they know it. You know, I mean, food is just so far off. It's kind of like, you know, I'm sure you've had this. When I own the stores, the nutrition stores, I used to say this all the time. Like, oh, okay, well, you're having trouble eating? Cool. Or you're having trouble gaining? All right, what do you eat? And they go, a lot.
Yeah, all the time. A lot. I eat.
Okay, well, how much protein you bring in? I remember one guy one time, he said, because probably like 600 grams. And I was like, all right, well, he definitely doesn't know what he's eating. So I just said, all right, well, it's slow. Walk me through a day. You know what I mean? And about 5 minutes later, I'm like, so you're eating about 125 grams of protein and you're fucking starving. Like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
You know, so it's those things are the key. And I think that that's the big push. And everyone thinks that it's this whole like secret, or you're trying to keep guys away from doing things. It's like, no, I just want you to do it right. Because I have this theory, and I don't necessarily know that it's true, but if you don't maximize your eating and training first to where you know what you're doing with those two things, drugs allow you to make mistakes and still grow.
Because, good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Now,
yeah.
Key is, let's say that a cycle would yield you 10 pounds of muscle, like the drugs. Well, then wouldn't it be much better if your diet and training would yield you 6 pounds too? So you could have 16 pounds instead of 10.
That's where the difference lies.
Yeah, and the problem is, because people gain 10 pounds, they never know how much they left on the table.
Yeah, and also when you do especially your first early cycles, I always felt like the muscle you can put on in your early cycles.
Oh, it's different.
It's if you can pound it in, like think of like pounding it in and bolting it down tight, it'll become part of your new foundation.
Right. No, I agree. And I think what you said about last week about how to eat, you know, with everyone wanting to measure, okay, I had 126 grams of rice with meal one. And back then I was like, I ate 4 cheeseburgers.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was like, it was just food. Or they'd be like, you know, if somebody said, what did you have for lunch? I'd be like, pasta and chicken. How much? A big plate.
Right. Yeah. It was over. We were over macroed, but that's, I think what pounds in like size, it stays.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, the difference between.
You know, so it was like I would eat until I couldn't eat anymore. And that was a meal. I remember for a while there, I found that I came up with this theory. The best way to get the food in was to just make sure you got it. So instead of putting my food into five bowls, I put it into one.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd make sure I ate it all before the end of the day. So that
one giant Tupperware dish.
Yeah. And I would just eat as much as I could. And then I'd put it back in the fridge. And then I'd eat as much as I could and put it back in the fridge. And I would make sure at the end of my shift at 8 p.m. that it was gone.
Yeah. I did exactly the same thing with lots of jobs I've had. Just take one giant Tupperware dish with all your chicken and pasta in it. Mm-hmm. And you're just like dumping it out on a plate, heating it up, dumping it out on a plate, getting your food in by the end of the day. Yeah. You know,
nobody does that anymore because of what you do at the highest level. Cause now I know exactly what I eat. But I'm in a different place. I'm not trying to get to 225 pounds anymore. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. What, you got another good question there? Anything variety wise?
I don't think I mean, really everything else we have is pretty, vanilla that I had for these ones. So, you know, I think we locked out a pretty awesome one. I think the only thing I'd like to do is make sure by next week we're really loaded and have guys get some variety. And hopefully they're starting to see that really nothing is off limits, Tarantino or First Cycles.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm into doing next episode without a guest. Will be a lot of fun. So, everyone watching, you know, Instagram us with some good questions, for the show or comment and tag us. So we see your questions. I try to screenshot as many as I can and bring them through. And of course we miss some, and then sometimes they're like time sensitive questions. So if we miss them, it's like, ah, fuck, can't really go back and do them because it kind of had to do with like another show or something like that. So, you know, feel free to, if you've asked a question and we've missed it, just ask it again, because like we're still on a bit of a learning curve here, but
very, very
learning. My life's habit of learning things as I go, I just jump into them. Like, do you want to open a gym? Sure, sounds fun. How do we run a gym? I guess we'll find out. You know, like that sort of shit. So that's how the podcast was. Dusty and I just sort of bought microphones and we're letting it rip. So I got to thank Scott McNally for all the directing he's doing in the background, fixing stuff and editing stuff. You guys are going to see some really cool additions to the show. I think he's even got like some, like a title sequence ready for us, and he's getting fancy. So he's got a lot of plans for the show, and we just want to kind of let him run with his skills. So thanks to Scott and Advices Radio and Think Big Bodybuilding Media. And you guys know where to find us by now. Tell your friends. Any closing words, Dusty?
Man, just keep eating, and hopefully y'all can listen to this episode before your next training session, because I'm out of here in an hour. I'm definitely going to be using some of the fuel from this one to blast through it.
Yeah, I plan on doing some stiff leg deadlifts today, so that was a perfect guest for stiff leg deadlift day. You know, I'm just going to hear that British accent in my head when he says, when I pull, you know, and he talks about how they don't say deadlift, they say pull.
Yeah.
When I pull, you know, so I'm going to hear him talk about pulling while I'm getting ready to deadlift. So it'll be a good one. Thanks, Dusty.
No doubt. Till next time, listen to your classical music and train hard.
Remember, guys, it's just bodybuilding. Spread the word throughout the land. They say, bad guys, we're black, we're taking cancer, man.